From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Today on the program, we are talking back to school. It's just a couple of weeks away from when students are, in some cases, heading back to school, in some cases, heading back to online school. And we've got a couple different versions of that going on our show today. We're going to hear in a moment from the Viroqua area schools, where they have a sort of a hybrid thing going on that we'll talk about. And then in the La Crosse School District, we'll speak with that superintendent there about why that district has chosen to go completely online for their at least the first month and then reevaluate after that. And then we will also in today's program talk to a psychologist about some of the mental issues that students face, either having to do with all the talk of viruses and fears going back to school, or from the results of unintended isolation that can happen when you don't monitor what's going on with children when they're expected to be home more of the time. So that's all coming up on today's Newsmakers. Right now, we're joined by Tom Burkhalter. He is the district administrator for Viroqua Area Schools, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to Newsmakers. Mr. Burkhalter, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ezra.
So I guess the question on everybody's mind is, September 1st, school starts in Viroqua. What's it going to look like this year?
Well, definitely it will look different. I think we've got a variety of changes and plans in place that many districts have definitely gone through that planning process. For us, we are going to be reopening as a hybrid model, which what that means for us is that our K through 6 students will be attending school 5 days per week on a shortened day, as dismissal would be at either 2:20 or 2:30, and our high school and 7 through 12 actually will be returning in person on a 2-day schedule, an AB model as laid out, pretty much along the lines of what DPI laid out. So we'll have an A group that meets on Mondays and Tuesdays, and a B group that meets on Thursdays and Fridays. The other 3 days will be a virtual learning experience for the 7th through 12th grade students.
So what leads you to the difference in style between 7 through 12 and K through 6?
Well, a variety of differences based upon the needs of students, the educational needs of students at the younger grade levels, ability of older students to participate more actively in a virtual environment. But the major, reason as we're looking at that safety, it is suggested by the medical community that the younger students are slightly more resilient to the COVID-19 virus as well, and so trying to eliminate some of those students as far as in daily attendance was really our priority there to get those class sizes down to a more manageable number. Our elementary is an AGR school already, which is achievement gap reduction. So we do have smaller class sizes based on the parameters of that program already at the elementary levels.
What does AGR stand for?
Achievement gap reduction. And so it's trying to, it's a program that they're trying to, close the gap. And so one of the parameters of that program is that we keep our class sizes at a low number already.
Okay. And having the alternating AB schedule with the older grades will allow you to do that on that level as well.
Absolutely. So instead of having classes of 20 to 25, 26, 27, 28 in some cases, we're looking now at sizes of 12 to 15 in most cases.
So tell me about your school district, and for those who may not be familiar, is it everybody in the same building, or are there separate campuses, or what's the physical layout of your school district?
Sure. We have one campus, but two buildings. So we have our pre-K through fourth grade in one building, and our fifth grade through 12th grade in another building.
What precautions are you taking for those classes who are meeting in person, either full-time or on alternating days?
How much time do you have, Ezra? Anyway,
we have as much time as it takes to explain
we have, it. Yeah, we have a ton of things that are either put in place or are moving pieces that will be put into place.
I think most people are thinking of the big ones, like mask requirements, hand sanitation requirements, physical distancing, those kinds of things.
Absolutely. So we will be practicing social distancing to the best of our ability. There will be times when that's not an option, but for us here at Rocco Area Schools, we will be requiring facial coverings when you're inside the buildings. We'll also be requiring facial coverings when you're outside and cannot maintain those social distancing measures. We are installing hand sanitizing units in each classroom and at major points of intersection throughout the buildings. We also have, we are in the process of installing what's called the GPS needlepoint ionization system. And so that is a system that does a better job than the majority of HVAC systems at specifically killing viruses. Now, nobody makes the claim that they kill, you know, COVID, but it does kill viruses, bacteria, and mold, and also removes things like pollen, dust particles, and odors, on top of increased cleaning throughout the buildings. And we have purchased some misting equipment as well to sanitize those high population areas, such as hallways and lockers and things like that.
It removes odors. Those junior high teachers are going to love that.
I tell you what, if it does that, I mean, it's worth its weight right in that aspect, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, what about some of the parents who may just not be comfortable with their students in an in-person school setting at the moment? What options are available for them?
Sure, we do have a fully virtual option, and it looks different at each building, and within each grade level. And so the parents will have the choice on whether to, at the 7 through 12, you know, go with the 2 days a week in-person option or go with a fully virtual option. And we're partnering with a company called Edmentum that have been doing this for quite some time and that are really experts in virtual learning. And so we've partnered with them, and we're really excited about that partnership.
So you said it's different for each classroom and each building,
sure.
But what's the experience on the day-to-day like for, let's say, a high school student who's doing
sure.
that virtually?
Yeah, and again, that will look different based upon the classes that they are signed up for. So again, if you're signed up for if you have a couple of AP courses, advanced placement courses, or shop classes, or music, your day is going to look different. And so within that, even if you're on the fully virtual option, you will still have your choice of specials, which I think is a unique opportunity that most are not being able to, you know, most schools are struggling with providing, and we're going to be able to provide that. And then within that, there are different structures, but part of the program is the orientation of the Edmentum program is to have that schedule set out with your students, set out with your parents, and actually sit down and create that schedule together.
With all of this, I hate to call it the distraction of COVID-19, but it really, the focus has been so much on preparing to deal with just that. Talk about mm-hmm. the challenge of keeping an appropriate amount of focus on the actual education of children and how different that's going to be this year.
Well, to say that's been easy is absolutely a lie there. So we have been very focused on providing, you know, as safe as possible of an environment for our students to not only come back, but then also providing that academic high expectations academically and that rigor that we are expecting from in-person and in virtual to be very, very close or similar together. It's not easy. I'll be honest. I think this is my first year as a district administrator, and to go through this process, my August looks extremely different than any other August before for the district administrator in Viroqua.
Let me ask you about just the different opinions running around town regarding mm-hmm. whether people should or shouldn't be required to mask or follow other guidelines, or even the legitimacy of the data around the virus. As you, as an administrator, are trying to enforce these policies, what happens when somebody shows up to school and says, hey, my parents told me not to wear a mask, and I'm not gonna?
Yeah, we've worked through a variety of avenues for that very question, coordinating with our Vernon County Health Department, also Vernon Memorial Healthcare. We are amazingly blessed and lucky to have an actual hospital in a town our size that is able to give us some guidance. And so we're working with those as well as our legal departments and insurance companies, all of that fun stuff. Really what we have boiled that down to is if you know those choices are made and we've been very clear that it will be a requirement, it will be treated as a dress code issue and again, ideally, we would be able to, kind of close that gap and just say, this is for the benefit of everybody. While there is, there are many media outlets out there, and you can pretty much find anything that you're looking for to support your stance. We are really, truly relying on the public health experts within our area to help us make those decisions.
What about access to schools? Other people coming and going, vendors, visitors, that kind of thing. What restrictions are put on that this year?
Yeah, we won't be having visitors in the buildings, at least at the beginning of the school year. Parents coming in to visit their students or guest speakers will be really trying to use the virtual options, Zoom meetings, Google Hangouts, Google Meets, just trying to give kids the experience that they deserve, but also offering them that safety piece of not bringing in more people than necessary into their direct contact.
Athletics is not one of the three R's, so to speak, but it's a very important part of school for a lot of people. How is that going to work?
Well, that's a great question, and we've been looking to not only the Cooley Conference athletic directors that we're a part of, but also WIAA to help us make those decisions. And they've laid out some guidelines. I think for us, even in the Cooley Conference, it's very difficult. We span four counties and range from very urban settings or rural settings. And how does that it looks completely different if we're talking about going all the way up to Arcadia and even farther north than that, down to us. So they're working on a plan right now that I think is a solid one. Obviously, everything is subject to change based upon WIAA and the decisions they make.
But are for instance, normally football teams would have started practicing well before now. Is your football team currently practicing?
No, they are not.
Okay.
I believe the first date, I believe, is September 7th, so
okay,
that we can start along with volleyball, our later start times this year.
All right. Well, look, I appreciate you joining us, and I can't imagine the amount of work that you and your fellow administrators and teachers are having to do to make sure that school is a success this year, and I certainly appreciate your taking time to talk to us today. Tom Burkhalter is the district administrator for the Viroqua Area Schools. Mr. Burkhalter, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ezra. Have a great day.
Yes, you too. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio, and we appreciate you listening. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios, of course. If you'd like to reach out to the show, if you'd like to hear a past episode on demand, you can do so at wpr.org/newsmakers. Newsmakers continues. We're talking to the superintendent of La Crosse Schools next. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Thank you very much for joining us today. And we're talking about heading back to school. And we're hearing from a couple of superintendents of some local area schools, including Dr. Aaron Engel, who's the superintendent of La Crosse Schools. Dr. Engel, thank you very much for joining us again on Newsmakers.
Happy to be here.
So this school year begins much like last school year ended for students in La Crosse. Talk a little bit about what students and families can expect in a couple of weeks when school starts.
So at this time, the School District of La Crosse, we've committed to a virtual start to our school year. We're unsure at this time, you know, what the conditions in the community will be in, I guess it's about 3 weeks now. And so in terms of safety for our students and our staff, we know that we'll be able to start virtually, and we really want to focus on a strong virtual start, which will provide the framework and foundation for the rest of our school year. Hopefully conditions improve throughout the school year, and we're able to come back in in-person learning for the majority of the school year. However, we know that students will be out of school from time to time due to quarantines, or you know, maybe even whole classrooms or whole school buildings. And so starting virtually will give us the foundation we need to be successful throughout the rest of the school year when students are out for a period of time or even whole buildings.
So how many schools are part of your district? How many students are under your purview?
We have about 6,600 students. We have 9 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, 2 high schools, and a number of charter schools as well.
And so how is that online experience? You talked about this sort of setting the framework for, you know, making it familiar, getting the kinks worked out so that maybe if schools or groups of students have to go online even after in-person classes resume. But how is this online experience different from what was kind of a bit of a rush job last year?
Absolutely. The end of the school year last year, you know, that is not the amount of time we would want to prepare to go to emergency remote learning. At that time, we had essentially 2 days of notice to make a monumental shift in how we instruct students. And through that period, we learned a lot. We learned about what our students need, the best instructional practices for that mode, and how to engage students in online learning. And so not only did we learn lessons from those few months that we had to transition to emergency remote learning, we also learned a ton over the summer as we explored virtual options and virtual teaching in greater depth. And so we've made a number of changes. We have invested in a learning management system called Canvas, and we have developed numerous days of training for our teachers to be able to use that platform, as well as to learn how to implement their curriculum online. And so we're in a significantly better place now than we were at the end of the school year in our preparation and ability to teach online.
One of the things that I heard from various parents last year, and not all in your district, this isn't anything about your district in particular, but a lot of them were a little bit concerned that due to the situation being what it was, a lot of the time that students had last year was self-directed or independent learning, and they would basically conference with their teachers on a fairly regular basis and have a limited amount of time where the class was together on like a Zoom call or something like that. Is this year different than that, or does it kind of follow that sort of model?
It will definitely be different this year. One of the criticisms that I heard, you know, as we moved to emergency remote learning last year was that there was a lot of assignments, but not a lot of instruction. And so that's really, I think, a difference that students will experience and parents will see this year. Our emphasis is on instruction and providing opportunities for students to learn synchronously, where they're all together at the same time with their teacher, but also providing opportunities to access that instruction asynchronously, you know, on their own, you know, when the teacher may not be present online. And I think we need a blend of those things because the lives of our students are varied. You know, they may be taking care of younger siblings. They may be assisting their parents in working in the evening. You know, I know there was a couple of students I talked to last year who were watching their younger siblings during the day. You know, these were high school students, and they had middle and elementary students. So they were taking care of childcare, helping them with their homework, and then they had their regular part-time job after school that they went to. They weren't able to access or engage in their own learning until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And I think there's any number of students that are still in that position, and we want to be responsive to their needs by providing a high-quality asynchronous option. But we also know that a lot of students need to be with their classmates and with their teacher, and if we can do that online synchronously, we want to provide that as well.
You talked about getting some of that feedback after last year's experience. What other concerns have you heard from parents or students?
I would say the number one thing that a lot of parents have expressed concern about is how is their child going to be supervised during the day? You know, if the parents are working, you know, there's a real concern about how to provide supervision for their children if schools are not open, and there aren't a lot of easy answers for that. We're still working through options ourselves. We're looking at possible collaborations with the YMCA and the Boys and Girls Club. But there's really a limited number of people available to provide those services, and to try and do that safely is a challenge as well.
Let's look ahead a little bit, understanding that this part of the conversation is perhaps unfairly speculative and depends on factors in the community that you don't have any control over. But what does a return to in-person education look like to you? What are you looking for as benchmarks for a possible safe return to actual school buildings?
You know, I guess the big thing would be the public health considerations are number one. We want our students and our staff to be safe when they're in our school buildings, and we don't want what we're doing here in the educational system to contribute to worsening conditions in our community either. So we're continuing to work closely with the public health department on when would be an appropriate time to return to school, as well as the conditions under which we would return. You know, in our working together, we've explored a lot of different things. There's the Minnesota model, right across the river here. There's also the system that New York is using to evaluate risk in their communities. And, there's various other public health entities. Harvard has put out a model that assesses risk in a community as well. And so we're going to be using, some version of that, hopefully, to assess our community risk to determine if it's safe for students and staff to return. At the same time, when we do return, we have a pretty good idea of what, is necessary to be safe here at school. We need to use physical distancing. We need to wear masks. We need to wash our hands frequently. We need to limit the size of groups, and we need to be able to keep track of where kids are at so that we can assist in the contact tracing process if somebody is ill here at school. So I think the actual procedures when we're here are relatively simple. The more difficult question is, when is it safe to return so that we're keeping students and staff safe and our community safe as well?
Even though students aren't coming back to your facilities yet, have you begun that process of evaluating the physical space available and sort of reappointing schoolrooms or retrofitting, hand sanitizer dispensers or making provisions for masks and other things in your facilities already?
Yes, we've definitely been doing that. We've been putting plans to return into place since the day we left. You know, we've always been thinking about coming back. Initially, when we left school on March 18th, we thought it might be a two-week, school closure, and that we would have to return in a safe way, in April. And so those plans have simply continued as we've learned more. And so we have addressed classroom spacing, safety procedures, screens, masks, sanitation, cleaning schedules. We've been thinking about that continuously since March.
So let's talk about, this is going to work, I'm sure well for at least as well as can be expected for most of your students, for most of your families. But there are people on the fringes and quite a number of them who may not have the technological equipment, may not have the best internet connectivity in their home all the time, or may have to share that with other family members who are working or schooling from home, and so bandwidth becomes a problem. What resources are in place, or maybe parents are working offsite and students, you know, have to be home alone or whatever. What resources are in place to accommodate or help people for whom stay-at-home school is just a really bad option?
So we have supported families through technology. You know, initially when we went to remote learning, we did not have technological devices or a one-to-one program for every student. And so we've purchased iPads for students kindergarten through third grade. So we now have a device that every student can take home in kindergarten through 12th grade. So that helps alleviate the technology access burden. You mentioned broadband and access to internet. That is another challenge. We do have hotspots for Wi-Fi that we're able to distribute to families that are in need. And we're also working with local providers and statewide programs to provide access directly to homes as well. You know, so those are some of the ways that we're helping alleviate that burden.
So, you know, in spite of all of the talk, or maybe because of all of the talk about the virus, what's going to happen in the community, the unknown factor of how long we're going to be doing this from home rather than what students might be used to going to school, it can be overwhelming for a lot of people in certain ways. And your teachers are no exception, in addition to the families. How do you help people deal with the emotion that they might be experiencing or the extra stress that this is adding to their lives, either families or educators, and help them move beyond that or at least work through that to keep the actual education of students top of mind?
Absolutely. As we know that this pandemic and the school closure has been traumatic for a lot of individuals, we know that there's, you know, any number of students in our community that, you know, struggled with issues at home or with mental health issues before the pandemic, and those have often been exacerbated because of it. And so we have systems in place to support students' social and emotional needs. We have, you know, resources available to support, you know, financial needs for some families as well. You know, we've got a real strong emphasis on that social and emotional learning as we return, and supporting students in that way. You know, we're absolutely focused on the academic outcomes of our students, but particularly at this time, you know, we have a very strong emphasis on supporting students' social and emotional needs as we return to school.
Aside from the academics of it and what everyone expects schools to make the first priority, that Central Logan rivalry runs deep, and I know a lot of people want to know what's happening with the athletic teams related to lacrosse schools. What's going on athletically this year?
Yeah, the WIAA delayed the starts of all of the athletic seasons for this fall. You know, we've been using the guidance from the county up to this point to determine what was safe in terms of, you know, virtual participation versus in-person versus, you know, full-on competitions. The WIAA Board of Control has another meeting on Friday, and we anticipate some further guidance there. For those paying attention to college athletics, the Big Ten just canceled their fall athletic season out of safety concerns. I personally have some pretty significant concerns about our ability to successfully run our fall athletic seasons in this environment, and particularly given the close contact and the close sustained contact that many of our athletes would face while practicing and competing. And so while we still haven't made any decision to cancel the fall season, you know, I guess I'm relatively cautious about proceeding this fall. And so we're waiting for the guidance from the WIAA and the State Department of Health, and we're working closely with our local county officials, but I don't have a very optimistic view of what's going to happen this fall. And so hopefully the conditions in our community improve significantly and we're able to practice in a limited way and potentially even compete in some low contact sports. But you know, at this time, things aren't looking very optimistic in that regard.
Well, I certainly wish you well as the school district, or as the school year gets going. Dr. Aaron Engel is the superintendent of La Crosse Schools. Dr. Engel, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to find more information about the program, you can always contact us through our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Coming up, a conversation with a local psychologist about the mental health impacts of the COVID-19 decision to either stay home from school or go back to school in the middle of a health crisis. So we'll hear from Dr. Leah Morkin after this timeout. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studio in La Crosse, and we're talking about back to school. We've heard from a couple of school administrators and finding out what their different kinds of plans are for the opening of the school year. And now joining us is Dr. Leah Morkin. She's a psychologist and the clinical director for the Family and Children's Center, which serves not only La Crosse, but Winona, Minnesota, Viroqua, Sparta, Black River Falls, and more. So, Leah, thank you very much for joining us again on Newsmakers.
Well, thank you.
So I guess as we think of children heading back to school after all summer and a really weird experience at the end of last year for most of the spring semester, we're looking at a couple of scenarios. Kids going back to in-person classes as they're doing in some schools, or as some schools are opting to do, having more distance learning or remote learning, online education, or some hybrid of the two. From a psychological point of view, is there one of those that is preferable while a pandemic is still going on?
I would say that whatever works for the family will be what is best for the family. Kids can have increased anxiety or even depressive symptoms during this time. And so if a family feels like it would be very important for a child to go back to school, to have those interactions with their peers and teachers, and that would help with some of their mental health symptoms, then I would say that would be really important for the family to decide and for that to happen. For other families, it's really important that your child is in a very kind of more controlled environment where you are certain that certain precautions are in place and that sort of thing. And so if that is something that really fits your family, then maybe an online or hybrid option would be more appropriate for your family. So really, it is such... this has affected people so differently that any decision that a family makes is really important that it's based on their own kind of beliefs and what's important to them.
So when let's take each option as it comes. First, let's look at going back to school. As we heard earlier in this program, we talked to the administrator of the Viroqua Area Schools, which is a community that you're active in. But they're not the only ones who are offering at least in some grades partially in-person education and in some grades 5 days a week in-person education. What should parents be looking for as their children head back to the classroom after they've been absent from the classroom for a while?
Sure. So a child now is probably maybe excited to go back to school and see their friends and their peers and be in that environment. However, that environment probably will be different than it has been in the past, and maybe they're expectations won't be the same as what they are receiving in the school districts, because I can imagine school districts have had to make some changes and some different pieces to help with precautions and to keep everybody safe. And so something that parents can really look for with their children, or just really do for their children, is to listen to their concerns and just listen to how their days are going and what it's like for them now, and try to do that without judgment. Everything has kind of changed and shifted, and so a really important thing to do is to really, really listen to your child when they have concerns and to take those concerns seriously. Things that you can kind of look for as possibilities that they would need further help, or they're having really big concerns with their mental health, would be something like if they are so anxious that they go to school and then they feel like they can't do it anymore. If they verbalize that it's just too worrisome and it's just not working and that sort of piece, if you see that really high anxiety, it might be important to really sit down with them and talk about that, or maybe even reach out for professional help. Other signs and symptoms of depression would be if they are not socially interacting with their friends, if they tend to isolate more when they get home, and that sort of piece. And so that might be something that would be important, again, to talk to your child about first and then seek help as needed.
So let's take the other likely option is a distance learning model, digital learning, online learning, however you want to put that, where you're basically with the other children in your household, or much, much smaller groups that way. What are the signs to look out for if a parent might have, so what are the concerns that could come up in that environment?
Well, that is very similar to the other environment also. So if you see a change in their kind of personality, or if they really are showing a lack of motivation to do their schoolwork, if you're seeing that they don't want to interact with friends, if they don't find some enjoyment and that sort of piece. I mean, it's going to take, I know online school doing school from home is really a difficult thing for both a parent and the child. And so, you know, like, creating workspaces that are specific to school so that the child can feel like they can go to school and then they can leave that workspace and they can be home and they can enjoy their time at home also. And I've heard, you know, things like have the child even pack a backpack if they're going to be on online school so they have all their supplies. It feels like I'm moving from my home to my computer to do work, and then once I step away from my computer, I can leave my supplies there and leave my schoolwork there and still enjoy my time at home, because I do believe that creating that separation from school and home is really important. And this goes for adults, too. If you're working from home, trying to create some separation, otherwise it feels like you're at work all the time, or you feel like you're at school all the time, and it's important to have that fun home aspect also involved.
I want to circle back to something that you said earlier, which is some advice that parents should listen to their children's concerns, and especially to listen without judgment. Because I think, and without faulting anybody for this, obviously the goal of most parents is to raise healthy, well-adjusted, successful children, you know, turn them into well-adjusted, successful adults. And part of that is, you know, correcting what's wrong and fixing the problems and so on. So how do we step back from that role of influence of trying to correct what's going wrong and simply create a space where a child can be heard without judgment?
Absolutely. And so right now we are all kind of in the same boat, let's say, that we are all kind of living under these changes and like the new normal and all those different things. And so we have our own feelings as adults, as parents, about certain things such as online schooling or having to go to school from home or having to work at home or not seeing the people that you enjoy seeing and that sort of thing. And so what's really important for parents is to try to set their own beliefs and their own ideas aside when they're talking to their child and just really listen to what their child is saying and accept their opinions and their difficulties as different from their own because sometimes it's really hard because we're all kind of wrapped up in this in the same thing, and really we care so much for the, our children that we do. We want to just fix all their problems, but really it's just important to hear their problems from their perspective and perhaps just offering support of how they can solve some of their problems themselves.
Whether a child is sort of craving and even lacking the social interaction that normally comes with being around other children their age and might be experiencing the negative effects of that, or whether they are going to school in an environment where the constant emphasis on protecting themselves from a virus they don't completely understand might be bothering them to some extent, how do these psychological issues or potential psychological issues manifest themselves? Are we looking for changes in behavior or swift spikes or declines in academics, or a change in who a child wants to be friends with? I mean, those are kinds of things that could happen from one school year to the next anyway.
Correct. And they are all different things that you're kind of looking for. If, like I said, like if a child is having difficulty connecting with friends, but they used to be really outgoing and it's a change in their behaviors, that's a sign. If your child has normally been a cautious child or maybe a little more shy, but now they're doing more risky behaviors, or they are really, really outgoing and it's just a complete change in personality, that can also be a sign. You can also you can notice anxiety, like if they are excessively restless, or if they are not interested in things that they were interested in the past, or if you can't spark their interest with different things that have worked in the past. All of those are different signs of a change in their perception and their personality, and it might be a sign that something bigger is going on.
So how much, and I guess it probably depends on age, but how much should kids know about what's going on? As adults navigate the various issues of health that are concerning in their neighborhood and maybe delve into some of the conspiracies that they might have heard at work or that's being spouted by their friends, or worries about who's got trustworthy information or whatever, how much of that do we express to our children?
Well, it's important that children understand what's going on to a point. And again, you are so right, this is so age-specific for a child. A younger child, like, it would be important for them to understand why people are wearing masks. Why is, if they do choose to go to school, why is the teacher wearing a mask? Why do they look different? Why do we have to sit 6 feet apart? Why is all of this happening? Those are very important things for a child to know. Otherwise, that can create extra anxiety just because of all the different changes. As your children get older, they may want more details, and that's completely appropriate. And so that might be even something you could do with them, is to research, well, where, what is happening right now? What is this, and how is it affecting us? And just really, the better they can understand it and the more you can work as a team to try to figure it out, the better off and more supported they will feel. And so kind of across the board, it's important for all children to kind of understand what's going on, but based on age, depends on how many details you can give them.
Leah, you're the clinical director at the Family and Children's Center. I guess in a short amount of time, elevator speech style, what, tell us a little bit about what your organization does, what services you provide, and how people can get in touch.
Absolutely. So here at the Family and Children's Center, we serve children, families, and individuals with a whole continuum of services, and they're designed to strengthen both families and promote individual well-being. And so we have a whole continuum of programs, including outpatient programs, so outpatient therapy. We work with children, families, all ages. We have some more intensive level programs, including a day treatment program where children get 2 hours of skills and an hour of therapy every day. And then we also have residential programs that where a child, or we have an adult residential program also, where they live in the residence and get treatment on an ongoing basis. We also have different skills for adults that work out in the community to help people be more successful. So we have the whole range of mental health programs within the Family and Children's Center.
And where can people find some information about you if they're interested?
absolutely. We have, you can sign on to our webpage. It is fcconline.org, or you can call the La Crosse location, which is 608-785-0001.
Dr. Leah Morkin is the clinical director for the Family and Children's Center and has been kind enough to join us today. Thank you very much, Leah, for joining us on Newsmakers.
Well, you are very welcome. Thank you.
Absolutely. Local health officials are weighing in on back to school as well. We'll hear from them as we wrap up the show. That's next. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. With the total number of COVID-19 cases in La Crosse County now approaching 1,000, health officials are still urging caution, distance, and of course, hand washing for the public. With the active case count in La Crosse County at more than 150, parents are also keeping a close eye on what their schools are doing to start the new year. But the message isn't always clear. For example, while La Crosse schools are working virtually to start the school year, Viroqua schools, as you heard on this program earlier, are welcoming many of their students back to campus. And even in areas where schools still are closed, childcare providers aren't. Jen Rombalski is director of the La Crosse County Health Department.
Part of it comes down to when you listen to schools, and you know, we have been listening to schools for months, the planning around, and I just, one small example is when kids are in like really small, little people are getting ready for going out to recess in winter weather, how do you make sure that they are physical distanced? And you have, you know, one teacher perhaps and no other assistants. It's just a small example of all the little pieces that happen in a school setting with that number of kids and the faculty that are available or the staff that are available, that the lift is different than it is in a daycare provider setting. So I think it just has to recognize that those settings are really different.
That's Jen Rombalski. Steve O'Malley is the La Crosse City Administrator.
I was just going to add that on behalf of school districts all across the state, they're all making very difficult decisions. But many organizations, school districts outside of La Crosse County or our region, are making similar decisions to moving to virtual first, figuring out a hybrid model, while some smaller school districts are starting with in-face, face-to-face teaching. Each district is having to make their difficult decisions on their own, given that information. So even in communities without a compass, they've been making very similar decisions to our local school districts. And it's a huge responsibility, and we want to be helpful, but we can't offer certainty in everything that's happening in the pandemic. We just want to offer the best data possible. And it is interesting to note that many districts across the state have made very similar decisions to our local districts.
Steve O'Malley from the City of La Crosse. Dr. Paul Mueller is Regional Vice President for Mayo Clinic Health System.
Yeah, these decisions have to be tailored to the individual situation. A daycare situation is, quite honestly, quite a bit different than a high school. And so those decisions have to be tailored according to risk and are the institutions prepared? I'll come back to Mayo Clinic. We're one of a large system of hospitals, and we were the last in the entire system to relax our restrictions because of the nature and configuration of our hospital. We felt we wanted to see what happened elsewhere before we made any decisions to relax our visitor policy, for example. And schools should do that. Other institutions should do that. And starting virtually might be a really good plan for whatever school district's involved. And it also gives them the benefit of seeing how other schools that are actually opening face-to-face do in this environment.
That's Dr. Paul Mueller with Mayo Clinic Health System. Jen Rombalski, Dr. Paul Mueller, and Steve O'Malley spoke at a media briefing last week. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau. If you've missed part of today's show and would like to hear it again, or if you'd like to stream on demand any of our episodes, you can find our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. That's where you can drop us a line about something you'd like to hear on the show or a question you'd like us to find an answer to as well. If you would like to take our show with you, you can subscribe to our podcast by going to any podcast platform and just searching for Newsmakers and hit that subscribe button. Let us know when you do it. I'd appreciate it very much. For John Davis, Dawn Jewell, and the rest of us in our Southwestern Bureau, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.